Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Roll in.
Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends. You got DJ Silencer here in the house. What's up, MC Chorboy?
MC Chorboy, I gotta get some of that Chorboy, dog.
Yes, so explain what you heard about Chorboy today, and I'll tell you what I heard about Chorboy years ago.
Chorboy, all right, so it's like a Brillo pad, you know, like something you use to clean stuff, you know,
to clean a grill. If you ever worked in a non-McDonald's fry place where you're running the grill, you know what Chorboy is because you use it 24/7 to clean the grill.
It is what it sounds like. You're the Chorboy. You're using Chorboy.
It's really coarse steel wool, basically.
Apparently, according to the ATF, you have to have a gun license to buy it now.
Why is that? What does the ATF say someone could use it for? I do not understand.
Well, this is a blog post from David Kodria. Pronounce that right? He's our friend.
I believe so.
Okay, good enough. Anyway.
I've talked to him a million times by email and only once by phone, and I think I called him David, not... I should have asked him how to say it, but...
Well, the ATF, or the BATFE, the B-A-T-F-E.
The Bureau of All Things Fun, ATF.
Right. They say it's a firearm subject to registration and a $200 transfer tax. This was from a letter obtained by the Gun Rights Examiner. And now they say that, you know, I guess it's related to a silencer. They say a silencer is a firearm per U.S. code subject to National Firearms Act registration and transfer tax requirements. Sound and gas absorbing materials manufactured from Chorboy copper cleaning pads along with fiberglass insulation constitute a silencer. So wrap your head around that.
So do you need an ATF transfer stamp to buy it to refill your silencer that's gone unsilenced? Or if you work at the corner burger place, do you need an ATF stamp to go buy more to clean your grill?
Well, they say it's subject to, so I suppose that would be at the discretion of any ATF agent who's involved in any kind of investigation. So if they wanted to go after the local fry joint that's not McDonald's that has a bunch of Chorboy stockpiled in the back, theoretically they could, according to this ATF form.
Wow. Which leads us to the name of today's cast, which is Property Rights in America Are Really Just an Easement. Now, what is an easement before we get back to the other use for Chorboy?
From my understanding, easement, I guess you mean like a change in the rules just for your sake, an exception?
No. An easement is the use of property that's not yours. Like if you buy 30 acres that's an island in the middle of someone else's 1,000 acres.
Right.
When you buy it, you usually buy an easement, which is the right to use the one road that goes into it.
Got it. My bad. I was thinking of a variance.
Right. So I've come to the conclusion that property rights in America are literally just an easement because the government can always take, like, okay, if you've bought a silencer and you've bought the ATF stamp to have permission to have it and the silencer gets old and it's not silencing anymore and you stuff it with Chorboy to renew it.
Which I didn't even know you could do.
I didn't know either.
Have you heard about that on forums?
I don't know anything about silencers, only what I've seen in movies, and it's probably wrong, but... You know, and the unintended consequence of things like this is the ATF complaining about this probably teaches people how to go look up and make a silencer more than, you know, I mean, I didn't know that.
Exactly. And, well, they make the problem bigger so that they can ask for a bigger budget. If it's a problem, I wouldn't call it a problem in the first place.
I don't even know if they always think that way, too. I just think they think there must be more laws. You know, I think sometimes right. It's we need a bigger budget, but they always get a bigger budget anyway because everything always gets worse under governments. So, yeah, property rights are really just an easement. You know, you think you own a house, you don't really own it because they could come take it to put a mini mall there or... they could just take it. They could just drone you. Now, before we get to the other use of Chore Boy, talk about the phone call you got the other day.
All right. Well, I got a funny call the other day. I don't know if it's really anything of substance, but it made me chuckle. It made Michael chuckle. I was talking to Michael. We were going over some business stuff and some podcast stuff, and I got a weird call from a Florida number, and I was like, okay, I don't know who this could be, but I might as well check it out. So I answer the phone. They say, "Is Jim there?" I said, "No." They said, "Well, are there any veterans in or around your house?" I said, "No, not that I know of." And they said, "Thank you very much, sir. Goodbye," and hung up. And I call Michael back, or I get on the other line with Michael. I'm like, I think I'm about to get droned.
Yeah, they just wanted to make sure the house was clear of anybody that was important to them first.
Yes, yes.
Because you do hang out with, you know, veterans all the time.
Apparently. So, yeah, probably nothing, but it was just funny because there are drones, you know, flying around in American cities now. Supposedly, they're not weaponized yet, but I think it was Montgomery County Sheriff's Department in Texas got this Shadowhawk drone that they paid for with a Homeland Security grant, and did mention in the article that they could theoretically weaponize it at some point. Of course, they said these would be non-lethal weapons like sandbags or tasers.
Drones go fast and can't hover, the ones I'm thinking of, the jet-like ones that they bomb people with, and I'm like, how would they, you know, specifically target a single person with a non-lethal weapon? Like, I'm thinking, like, sound cannon or dropping goo so you can't run away as quickly. But
dropping
you said that they're helicopters.
Yeah, they're like little helicopters, you know, about the size of a man or a tall man. And the less than lethal, quote-unquote, weapons they mentioned were possibly beanbags or taser. So I suppose it could hover low and shoot a beanbag from sort of a shot shell at you or hit you with the taser.
Yeah, and you know, they actually, I saw an article in Wired magazine about how the U.S. government, I think the Department of Defense or the Army or somebody with all the money in the world, our money, has come up with, at least for testing so far, they've come up with little spy drones that are the size of and look like and behave like hummingbirds.
Right, I have read about those. I don't really, it was just a one-off article, I think, a long time ago or just a mention in it, so I don't know what the status of those, if they've ever actually been developed to being, you know, something that can be used yet or not.
I'm just picturing, like, Dale Gribble shooting real hummingbirds in his yard because he thinks that...
Right, right. Well, I mean, it does set a dangerous precedent no matter what. I mean, even if they are supposedly only going to be used right now to... Because this was the other thing. The law enforcement official, the Montgomery County Sheriff's spokesperson, was saying, you know, these will mostly be used to, you know, for search and rescue and public safety operations. Like, okay, sure. But once you have that ability, once it's there, I mean, that is literally the slippery slope.
This actually, the little robot flying things actually came out of, there's this weird triumvirate of like hobbyists, MIT research, and the military. And it's like a lot of those robots, you know, the robots that fight battle bot contests are sponsored by the Army. And the Army send, you know, spies or I guess you'd call them scouts, you know, like in sports, to find the guys that can make the best kill bots, and they hire them. A lot of times where the feds and the military get their boy genius or girl genius, hacker, programmer, engineer types, is they bust people for breaking some law, like hacking or something. And it's like, you either go to prison or you go work for us.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
The hummingbirds came out of something at MIT that was like, I believe it was a contest among engineering students there.
Right, right. Well, you know, drones are scary things to me, completely scary. Just the thought that you could be walking along one day, and the precedent has already been set for killing an American citizen with a drone. I mean, it might not have been in America, but...
It will happen in America. And, you know, it'll be someone that everyone thinks is dangerous, like a child molester or, you know, someone selling Chore Boy at the corner store so they can.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Hey, you know, this really cool gal, and everyone should check this out, Julie Strohmeyer, I think I'm saying that right. This gal I've been talking with on Facebook. She and her friends did this calendar to raise money for Ron Paul. It's called pinupsforronpaul.com. And I'll link it. It's pinups4ronpaul.com. And they do like 40-style pinup girl, scantily clad swimsuit kind of stuff with Ron Paul messages in it. and they're awesome. You should go buy one. And she gave a shout out to the Freedom Fiends on her Facebook site. She said, on her Facebook wall, she said, check out the Freedom Fiends before these guys get dragged off to Gitmo. Give them a listen.
They'd love to drag us off to Gitmo, I'm sure.
I'd still be broadcasting from Gitmo because, you know, in a way we would, because our stuff would be out there and everybody's supposed to be, we're inviting everyone to download all our episodes and save them. So if anything ever happens to us, you can just flood BitTorrent and Pirate Bay and Facebook and everywhere right. with them.
Listen to them and then talk amongst yourselves.
You know, if I was ever, like, you know, shot by goons for no reason at all, you know, I wouldn't waste my dying breath, if I had one, to, like, get on the internet and post some last message or anything. I'd have no need to, because this whole, my whole life is my last message.
Exactly.
You know, I live my life that way. Like, I work my ass off on everything I do to the point where everything I say, it's okay if it were the last thing I ever said.
Yep, yep.
And I hope the last thing I ever said isn't, did you know that Chore Boy is used for a screen in crack pipes?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd known that Brillo pads were used. I didn't know it was like Chore Boy was like one of the top brands for crackheads. But apparently,
oh, you got to get yourself the Chore Boy, son.
No, I know that from NA meetings. I mean, I've heard lots of sharers that in San Francisco in NA meetings that included like,
so like I had some crack, but the store was closed. I couldn't get no Chore Boy, so I took a brick and I broke into the store window and I stole some Chore Boy from my, well, I stole it from my job, and then I showed up at work the next day and helped him look for whoever broke the window.
Right, right. Well, Pimp C said, you know, I let the fiends hit it till they taste the Brillo pad in their chest. So I'd heard of that before. But
so I guess that Chore Boy is probably a good company to own stock in because it can be used for cleaning grills, making silencers, or smoking crack.
Right, see, you smoke crack, and then you have the energy to clean the grill and make a silencer.
You know, they'll probably put, yeah, they'll probably try to put, the feds will probably try to put the Chore Boy company out of business, even though none of this has anything to do with them. They just make a product for cleaning grills, literally, and have for a long time, years, decades.
Right, right. And that's another good point to make is companies necessarily can't control what their products are used for. I mean, if you make them and people buy them and they've bought that property, they can use that Chore Boy for whatever the hell they want to use it for.
No, they can't, because property rights in America are just an easement.
Just an easement. Unfortunately, you're right. Obviously, that's not the way it should be, but there's a ton of examples of that. Not even your body you really own in America, and, you know, we've talked about that before in my video I Own Me. I try to speak out against that, but I mean, you can't even put what you want into your body without the government placing some sort of restriction, which means that they believe that they own your body. Like you said, when you own a house, you have to pay property taxes on it. If you get behind, they can come take that house. They can just straight up take it. You know, who really owns the house? It was Butler Schaefer who said that the true measure of who owns property is who can destroy it, you know?
Yeah.
And the government reserves the right to destroy your house to build a highway if they wanted to.
Yep. Yeah. And people think it's great, especially like I was thinking about liberals who think they're really hip, slick, and cool. And they're like, you know, I'm so different from those inbred redneck bubbas. Like, I understand how the world works, and they don't. And I thought of something the other day. It's like, if you argue in favor of the state in any way, like, well, yes, I don't like America, and I'll burn a flag, but I still think that the government should come in and make the world a better place. Whatever you believe, if you ever have an argument that includes the government should, or there should be a law, or blah, blah, blah.
Well, see, a lot of liberals couch it in these terms. They say, I think we should. We as a society shouldn't let people go hungry. We as a society should blah, blah, blah.
Then you're arguing in favor of the state. And if you argue in favor of the state in any way, no matter how liberal or literate you are, it's the literati version of a redneck bubba saying, USA, USA, America, fuck yeah, love it or leave it. These colors don't run, motherfucker. It's exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same, just in a different direction. You know, they want to use the guns of the government to, I guess, stick up business people and steal their money to pay for welfare mothers, you know? Whereas the rednecks want to use the guns of the government to fly overseas and cause Armageddon so that Jesus will come back to Israel or something.
It's not quite that simple for most of them, but yeah.
Well, yeah. Obviously I was oversimplifying everything there from both ends, but the point is that anytime you argue for the state, it's square, point one. B, you're arguing for violence. What you're arguing is that there should be a law or the government should force people to act one way rather than another.
You know, I've been talking a lot lately with liberals who are my friends from back in the day, and having discussions with them, and they're like, I'm intrigued by this idea of yours of libertarianism, but blah, blah, blah. And what about the blah, blah, blah? An interesting case is I got interviewed the other day about the movie for a podcast that's run by this guy named Blag Dahlia. From this band, The Dwarves. Okay. And they're a kind of infamous punk rock band. It's been around for about 20 some years. They run Sub Pop. They their guitar player has one of the coolest names ever. It's He Who Cannot Be Named.
All right.
They have a reputation of violent shows, you know, people punching the singer punching the guitar player kicking the audience, you know, the club owner getting in a fight with the band. And this guy's my buddy. I've partied with him back in the day. I didn't even know it was him. I've never seen The Dwarves. DJ saw The Dwarves. She took her 15-year-old son at the time to see an all-ages show that they did in Hollywood where the guitar player was naked and then they had to make him get dressed because the cops were going to close it down or something. But I did this interview with him. It went really well. He said it was the best interview he's ever done interviewing anybody, which I took as an honor because he's a really smart guy and he interviews people like, you know, Jello Biafra from Dead Kennedys, Keith Morris from the Circle Jerks, the members of Crass, you know, the anarchist leftist English punk band that are really, really well known for spreading that kind of anarchy. And we've been chatting back and forth since. The podcast doesn't come out until around Christmas when he gets back from England. He's on tour in England. He left yesterday. But we've been chatting back and forth, and he's an extremely intelligent guy, but he's stuck in this liberal mindset of, you know, I don't like the government and I don't like cops, but without the government. And then he comes up with these questions that I've heard over and over and over and over of, you know, who would take care of the sick? Think of the children. More guns is dangerous. We should get rid of the guns. If you want a libertarian paradise, go to Somalia. You know, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they teach these things in school.
No, they do. Don't you remember? I mean, these are basic civics lessons in school.
No, I never heard the word Somalia in school, and I never heard any arguments.
Obviously, nobody knew what Somalia was.
I'm older back than in your you. Day. You know, when I went to school, they taught Richard Nixon's party line.
Okay. Well, therein lies the problem with government schools is it's always going to be a curriculum based on what's politically correct at the time.
You know what, though? But teachers have always been left in public schools, I think.
Maybe.
Because I remember, I mean, this was during the Nixon administration, and I remember, and during the Vietnam War, and I remember a couple teachers I had, they didn't dare say it, but they kind of hinted at, like, the hippies are right and the generals are wrong.
Well, see, the thing is apparently the arguments Blag was making, these are the basics that, you know, the mainstream right and the mainstream left can agree on. You know, what would we do without the government? Who would build the roads? Who would take care of the poor? Yada, yada. You know, there's always this basic baseline of statism that they both sort of consent to. And it just seems like that's sort of the line. When I hear a lot of arguments like this, like Jon Stewart sort of made these type of arguments when he interviewed Judge Napolitano, and I just felt like, you know, this was on the level of the high school government teacher whose real job is coaching football. That's the kind of level I get from these arguments.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, one of his arguments that I've heard over and over and over, it's always either who would take care of the roads, who would protect me from violent people, who would protect the environment, and who would school the children. And the environment question he asked was like, he said, I grew up near Lake Erie and I remember Lake Erie burning because it was so polluted when I was a kid. And I'm like, I grew up on Lake Erie, used to swim in it, and it never burned. It was like a river nearby it. I think it was the Detroit River, the Cayuga, caught on fire. But this has been repeated so often. It's like people almost think they saw it.
Right. Well, it's also sort of a red herring. I mean, it was a government situation if this did happen. And when there is pollution, there's always government involvement. Plants have been grandfathered or get permits, and they have situations where, you know, they're allowed to do certain things by the government. And usually it's on BLM land or land that was leased from the feds or the state. And so the real owners aren't real property owners. It's public ownership.
Yeah, without the government or without the system we have now and without corporate personhood, you know, the owner of the company that dumps battery acid in the river would be responsible. He wouldn't just pay a fine. He could go to prison or be punished or have to clean it up with a toothbrush.
Not only that, but I would bet the biggest polluter of the environment in the world is probably the U.S. government, vis-a-vis the military. I mean, and I'm talking about depleted uranium, unexploded cluster bombs, landmines.
And just ruining places. I mean, I think that destroying a city is a form of pollution to the max.
You think? Yeah. I mean, that's it.
And that was another argument he had, was like, with the subject line of one of the emails, and I'm not really picking on him because I really dig the guy, and after about 60 more emails back and forth with me, he's going to see the light and be a screaming libertarian and turn the dwarves into a political band, and they're going to become huge.
I hope. Well, it's not an ad hominem attack you're making. This is, you're attacking the idea.
I'm giving an example, and he's a big enough boy that he can live by me saying, hey, he wrote me these things, because we'll be able to look back in 6 months and he'll be able to laugh at these things, because he is one of the smartest people I've ever met who's in a band that people would think, really? I mean, people would think, like, really? The singer in the dwarves and the singer in Bomb are having a political discussion? That would shock a lot of people. But, you know, that was bad. That was then, this is now. We're both smart guys. Another one of the arguments he had was, the subject line in one of the emails was, vote for Ron Paul and take us all back to the Stone Age. And that's another one of these red herrings, is that without the government, we'd be living in the Stone Age. Whereas I think governments are better at taking countries back to the Stone Age, like they've done in the Middle East a lot.
That's a really good point. And, you know, another really good point, and I saw Ron Paul mention this in the debate. This woman was trying to grill him on education. Like, what would happen? Who would pay for this? And he's like, well, the government's been paying it. Look how high prices are. Look at how bad the situation is. We have a student loan debt crisis right now. That's what you get with government. She's like, well, how would people pay for education? He'd be like they pay for cell phones or computers. I think those are two really good examples.
I think that a semester of high school education would be as cheap as a cell phone, $30 a month or something. I think it would be like that.
It would have to be affordable if it was.
And you'd have a lot more money, because the government would be taking 50% of your money. They really do. Between state income tax, federal sales tax, tobacco tax, gasoline tax, and like the gasoline tax on everything that's brought to you in the store, you know, it's all taxed in hidden taxes.
Right. Property tax. And then, you know, the government taxing both sides of the transaction. You know, you pay sales tax on something, but whoever bought that product in the first place paid sales tax on it.
Not necessarily, because I've done wholesaling, and sometimes you don't pay it on that, but there are a lot of hidden taxes in between. There's the business taxes of the companies that make and transport the stuff and put it on the shelves. That's all included in the price and hidden.
Right, right. The point is that things would be a lot cheaper if you didn't have the government as overhead.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends got your blood boiling? Tell them what's on your mind. Contact them at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Our movie, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, the official release date is December 6th, but we have copies now. So go to the website, click on the link over on the side of the Freedom Fiends website. There's a little icon there. It'll take you to Libertarian Punk. And there's a PayPal link to buy it. And it's $18 postpaid, and you'll get it before you'd get it if you order it on Amazon. We have limited amounts. So check it out, y'all.
Yeah.
So I've got this thing now where I get in such a froth editing, you know, for 8 or 10 hours of this podcast. They're like, I should have a catheter. I could barely get up to pee, but it's like, I can't get up to eat. So I have DJ now each week buy me a box of donut holes, and I can't eat them with my fingers because they'll get sticky, and I'm doing a lot of mousing. So I have a glass of milk next on one side of the computer and a box of donut holes and a fork on the other side. And I eat them with a fork while I edit. So DJ Choreboy. You know, I had no idea.
MC Choreboy, get it right.
Who am I? DJ Silencer today. you know, I had no idea that's what you use to make a silencer. I've never really had any interest. I always liked that thing where Homer Simpson goes into the gun store and the guy tries to upsell him on a bunch of accessories. And one of them, he's like, silencer? Loudener? I'm like, I want a loudener.
Want a loudener, yeah. Yeah.
And then he offers him a speed cocker, which doesn't exist. You know, I heard a show the other day advertising Ruger products, and they're like, yeah, go check it out on the website. I think they're selling high clip mags.
High clip mags.
Yeah.
All right. Get high on my clips, baby.
Yeah. That's funny. High clip mags.
Obviously, they meant high cap mags, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And they're not, because they're from Ruger and they sell 10 round always. They did even before it was the law.
Right, yeah. Which is just the height of silliness.
If you want a magazine that's more than 10 rounds for a Ruger gun, you have to go to a third party. I have some. For a 22 even. DJ has a Ruger 10/22 rifle, and it has a little round mag that fits into it that comes with it. It's 10 rounds. And you could get like banana clip mags that take like 30 or 40 rounds.
See, when there's a need or a desire for something, somebody else will sell it. There's no problem. No worries.
Wait, I just said banana clip mags, but I actually think they're called that. But we're just making fun of the fact the word clip, like that's not really the word for a magazine.
Well, it's not, and we've had this argument before that, you know, gun purist or somebody like Boston Tea Party would probably get mad for somebody using the word clip. That's how people know it, and so...
But you're basically saying language is what people make it.
Language evolves, right, and if you say clip, people are going to know what you mean, so I think language has evolved.
A lot of gun users, including cops, say clip.
That's true.
I always thought it was silly when people try to have like an official language backed by law.
Yeah, which is...
That's defying physics, you know?
It really is. I mean, a lot of the things government defies...
A lot of what government ain't right.
I'm evolving my language right now. Ask me a question. No.
You're evolving your language and you're involved in your language.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's what an official language does, is it makes you not allowed to be involved in your language.
Well, yeah. Anytime the government tries to mandate anything, that's pretty much what it does. I mean, people should be free to find what works best for them, you know, in language, in life, in their transactions economically. And so, yeah, something like English only, and it must be a certain type of English, just silliness.
There's a great quote from a writer I really love called Bill Bryson. He's pretty much a travel writer, which I never thought I'd read 8 books by a travel writer, but it's some of the most fascinating, funny, hilarious, well-researched, scientific, poetic stuff I've ever read. Bill Bryson said that a language is a dialect with an army.
With an army, yeah. That's a good quote.
Explain that.
You explain it. You brought the quote up.
Well, people argue about the difference between a language and a dialect because, you know, languages generally evolve from other languages, and... At what point do you say something's a freestanding language, or at what point do you say something's just a dialect, which is a variation of an existing language? And Bill Bryson said it really well. A language is a dialect with an army. You know, if you can back it with guns, you can try to make everybody speak it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am very happy that the U.S. government hasn't tried to make English the official language yet, despite, you know, calls from lots of people saying that that should be how it works. I have no idea why people would call for that. I don't understand the impetus or the motivation why we would want...
It's ethnocentric. It's a way to, like, make things harder for people who don't have a green card. It's also kind of like, sometimes it's confusing to me to have to wade through other languages. You know, whatever. I think that should be a function of commerce, not of the law. You know, an interesting thing, I've been to Ireland. You know what people speak in Ireland everywhere?
I would assume English, but...
Yeah. You know what the official language of Ireland is?
Is it Gaelic or something?
It's Gaelic.
Really?
You know what percentage of people in Ireland can speak the official language?
Probably like 5%.
3%. Okay. And Gaelic, written and spoken, it's just like, Aurora, crane, here in bin, ah, death in a fiery hold, and I cannot hear the bin, and the van crane. You know, that's the directions of how to get to the bathroom.
Great. Yeah, we're going to sample that and turn that into a dubstep song or something.
Actually, it's me doing there's a Pink Floyd song called Several Species of Small Furry Animals Gathered Together in a Cave and Grooving with a Pict.
Wow, that's a hell of a title.
And that was me doing from memory phonetically some of the fake Pictish, which is in that song.
Okay, fair enough.
All right,
so enough about language for now.
The Libertarian Game of Life. Have you played the Libertarian Game of Life yet?
Not yet. That would require me to go buy an actual Game of Life and chop it up as per your directions on Libertarian Punk.
Yeah, and I'll link that. My wife, Deborah Jean, and I, DJ, and I, like to play the Game of Life.
And who doesn't? It's a great game.
Yeah, I know. It's a great game. And it's been a great game for like... It's actually been around for like 160 years.
Really?
Which is kind of amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it came out in the 60s.
I'd really love to get
forever.
A hold of, you know, the first version and see, you know, was it a wagon instead of a car that you...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, DJ and I got sick of the statism of it, so we altered it to be more libertarian, and then I did a blog post with photos and a downloadable sticker template, and it's things like, you know, you could gay marry... There's no career card for policemen. There are no traffic tickets ever. You get rid of the, you know, you cover the space that says run for Congress with one that says, like, win rifle championship.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
And
See, I guess you could have, instead of deleting the policeman, you could have printed out a sticker and changed it to private security person.
Yeah. Well, we did privatize the teacher. There's one that's, you know, teacher career card. We changed it to private teacher. And there's a space on the board that when you hit it, it says fund public arts exhibition, pay $125,000. And we changed it to fund private art exhibition. And I'm thinking, like, really, public? Okay, you want to pay, they have you paying even for something you're already paying for in that game.
Right. And somebody mentioned, I think, in one of the comments that, you know, this would be fun to do to, like, Monopoly. And it got me interested on what makes Monopoly not able to do that. And I guess the point is that when you land on somebody's space, you're forced to pay. And that's the gist of Monopoly, where it's not a free society. Because, you know, in a free society, you could leave Boardwalk or find somewhere else on Boardwalk. If somebody did own all of the Boardwalk, you'd just walk away if you didn't want to stay the night there.
First of all, in LibPair, as we see it, or at least as I see it, there wouldn't be monopolies as there are now, and it wouldn't be a crime to have a monopoly if it occurred organically.
Well, and I don't even think a monopoly in the sense of the word that people tend to think of it could occur organically, because somebody would always have the ability to find an alternative, to sell an alternative. And if that's what the market wanted, if the monopoly all of a sudden jacked up the price on their widgets and everybody's like, oh crap, I got to pay $100 just to get my widget, somebody else would sell an alternative to that for $5.
That's another thing that I kept talking with Blag about. He kept bringing up was, he, you know, he's like, I don't like the government. I don't like rules. I don't like laws. I don't like cops, but it's the only alternative I can see to corporations running everything, which I think would be worse. And this is something I've been hammering over and over to him, and mainly even before that, just all month to the Occupy people that I know, you know, that are blaming the corporations. It's like, without the government, corporations as you know it wouldn't exist. You wouldn't have corporate personhood. You wouldn't have government-funded monopolies. You wouldn't have the government playing favorites. You wouldn't have bailouts. You wouldn't have subsidies. You wouldn't have patents.
Yep, yep.
What else, you know? You wouldn't have all the roadblocks to starting a business and keeping one going that crush innovation.
Well, Stefan Molyneux puts it really well when he says corporations are basically a legal fiction bestowed by the state. And the way they work really wouldn't be beneficial to anybody. And, well, it'd be beneficial to some people in a free market, but it really wouldn't stand, because the way it works is it limits the liability of the people who run the corporation. You know, if the corporation loses money, who loses money? The shareholders, not necessarily the people. And if it goes under, it's the shareholders who take the loss, not the people who are running it. They don't have to put up their house. They don't have to put up their property and pay back the shareholders.
And another one that I hear, one of the rote arguments is people talk about, you know, without the government, without gun control, you'd have things like Luby's Massacre, you know, in Texas. And a lot of people use that. A lot of anti-gun people use that as an argument and don't realize, because the media never covers this, that Luby's is actually a anti-gun control argument too. And it's a better one, because Susanna Hupp,
she left her gun in the car, right? Because they had,
yeah, because it was illegal to have it in there. And her parents were murdered in front of her. And she's like, I'm a good shot and I'm into self-defense. And I would have shot that guy between the eyes as soon as he pulled the gun out and started pointing it at people.
Exactly. And anytime I see a gun massacre, that's the first thing I think. And we've mentioned it on the cast before. I think when there was that massacre, what was it, in Norway or one of the Scandinavian countries?
Not only did, like, nobody have a gun, in a lot of European countries, you're taught not to defend yourself. Like, people curled up in a ball when that guy pulled his gun out.
It's the government self-defense class from Guns and Weed.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, speaking of, you know, another, a lot of the arguments that people have against libertarianism always come down to, but who would take care of thee? And how would this work? And, like, not that I don't love arguing that all day and all night, although a lot of it comes down to the, we don't really know because governments won't let us try, and who knows? Like, we have these ideas, but it would probably have to evolve. It'd be something you've said, we can't even picture what it'd be like. And my analogy is, you know, it'd be like standing in a mainframe computer room in 1964 where you have, you know, $1 billion worth of equipment and 10 scientists to run it, and it takes an hour to program it to play a game of tic-tac-toe. If you were in that room in 1964, the year I was born, and you pulled out an iPhone and showed it to those scientists, it'd blow their mind. And it's like, if you ask those scientists in 2011, what do you think computers will look like? They probably would say they'll be smaller and cheaper. And so they might even say it'll fit in your hand because, you know, sci-fi had like Star Trek communicators back then.
Right.
But they wouldn't picture it doing what it does, and they wouldn't picture it being as free as and open, because back then only governments and government-funded colleges and huge corporations had computers. So they'd picture it being like, well, yes, they'll be smaller and more efficient for the corporations and the government.
Right. Well, I also like the argument when people say, who would take care of the roads? Who would take care of the poor? Who cares? I hate to reference Stefan Molyneux twice in one section, but, you know, his basic analogy is, who cares who picks the cotton once slavery is over? Somebody will find a way to pick the cotton.
That's the one I've been quoting to people, and it's like, I hate to just quote someone else instead of saying something brilliant by me, but it's like, I can't beat that one. And it's not brushing off the, well, we don't really have answers of how the schools would work, because we do, but we don't know, but it doesn't matter. You know, if you were an abolitionist in the 1800s trying to get rid of slavery, and someone said, but who will pick the cotton? You'd say, that doesn't fucking matter. Slavery is immoral, and we have to get rid of it. And government is immoral, and it's, why argue the little minutiae of how Johnny's going to get schooled. He's going to get schooled probably way better and cheaper and more efficiently and way less status than
he is
now.
Well, it's also like asking, how will the rapist have sex if we outlaw rape?
I like that even better.
It's really true. I mean, when you have force or aggression and violence is what society is based on, that's your first problem. That should be priority number one, is remove the violence from the situation. Remove the aggression from the situation. Only then can you move forward. And people always use this to say, well, government's a necessary evil. But, I mean, I find it hard to believe, and I really strongly believe that evil is never necessary. It's never necessary.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 3 strengths and 8 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com for a free starter kit, a $39.95 value, with the purchase of 40 cartomizers or more by using coupon code FREEDOMFIEND. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now. Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yeah. So, speaking of moving forward and speaking of rape or alleged rape, Joe Paterno has been in the news lately.
He has, and I was a little late to actually reading about this story.
You know who he is, though. You're a football
guy.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I've seen him on SportsCenter or whatever show he is, where he, you know, talks with his lisp and enlightens us about who's going to win what game and why. He's a really well-respected coach, and, you know, he seems like a pretty good guy.
He's a beloved coach. He's an adored coach.
Yeah, that's true.
Or was until recently. Actually, he still is by a lot of people. So basically, the story goes that at some point, he witnessed in the, what do you call that room where you shower in sports?
The locker room?
Yeah, you can tell that's how much I know about sports. Yeah, he, in the locker room, it was some summer camp for young people at Penn State where he's been a coach since the 60s. He walked through the locker room and saw an assistant coach sodomizing a 10-year-old boy in the shower. And, you know, didn't do it. I guess he went and told his boss, but he didn't tell the cops. He didn't try to stop it. DJ heard this, and she's like, f*** the cops. If I saw that, I'd pull out my sidearm and stop
it. Right, and I don't know if I'd pull my sidearm out first. I would be like, what the f***? And then I would go and try to stop it. If he obviously attacked me, I might have to pull out my sidearm, theoretically.
I mean, I might pull out a sidearm. It's not saying I'd shoot the guy, but it's like, you know, what would most people do? They'd go get a cop who'd come back and pull out his sidearm and say, wait, everyone's gone because someone had to go get a cop. This
right,
is
but
over.
I believe there's levels, and I think the sidearm would be an escalation. So I would obviously yell at the guy and tell him, hey, stop raping the 10-year-old boy. I mean, hopefully the witness, the fact that I'm there telling you to stop raping this 10-year-old boy would be enough. I imagine in a lot of cases it would be. I mean, if you're raping a 10-year-old boy and you get caught by somebody standing there looking at you like, what the hell are you doing? I would hope you would stop.
I'm wondering, like, what did Joe Paterno do? Like, I'm wondering if he walked by and they both kind of had a, like, what's up?
head nod
to each other or, you know, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to wrap your head around. And the other thing is, you know, it begs the question, what happened? Did Joe Paterno leave him to finish up or what? I mean, I don't want to be gross, but I mean, really, it seems like that is something that is an untenable situation and would have had to have been stopped. And any moral person would have made sure it stopped. That's my opinion.
Not in ancient Greece.
I don't even want to go there.
Okay, so my weird tertiary connection to this is, I'm not going to say his name, but the drummer from my old band, Baby Opaque, did not molest anyone and did not witness anyone being molested, but he is the tenured professor at Penn State who runs the Joe Paterno English department there.
Yeah, and they'll probably change the name of that.
I'm wondering if my friend will have a job there even. My friend is like one of the most lefty. He is far left of Nancy Pelosi. He's an author, and he's in that book by David Horowitz, The Professors, the 101 Most Dangerous Academics Who Are Ruining America. Mm-hmm. I actually know someone in that book, which is, I think it's kind of funny. Like, you know, I haven't asked him about this because I just figure he's got a million emails and a bunch of crap to deal with right now. But I'll ask him eventually.
Right.
Angela Davis is one of the people in that book. And Amiri Baraka and Cass Sunstein.
So you've also got a connection with Amiri Baraka. So you've got, you know, two of the people in that book on a personal level.
Hey, I'm friends with anybody as long as they're polite to me.
Right.
And people say it's hard to be friends with a liberal because, you know, they're or a statist, a Republican statist, whatever, because if you're friends with those people, they want to mug you at gunpoint by proxy. But I think that those people will never stop being that if they don't have cool friends like us. So, you know, it's our duty to make amends to the world for all the statism we've been involved in and supported and voted for in the past, to be friends with those people and lead them to the
night. I think that's
a
really good point. I mean, I think we should...
God, that sounds pompous.
In a way, but I mean, we believe our beliefs, or not even beliefs, but I mean, it's self-evident that violence is wrong and aggression is wrong, and I think we have to show them that the state is, at its essence, violence. And once we show them that, we can have a conversation, we can talk about it, and I think that's how you progress this whole thing towards a free society, is through that very thing, that very essence of education.
I'm amazed, you know, not just Blag, but so many punk rockers I know that are so statist in their own kind of hip, like, I don't like the government, but it's a necessary evil kind of way. It's like, punk rockers are supposed to be like the hippest, most countercultural people in the world. But to be backing the state as a punk rocker, I'm thinking like, really? Haven't you ever had your ass kicked by the cops? Come on, man. Statism is whack. Statism is square. Statism is busted. Statism is lame. And whatever else the kids are saying today, because I don't think they say square anymore.
No, but they should. I mean, we shouldn't be a mirror. And, you know, there are certain people that I respect that I think are cool and that have been cool recently that say square. Pimp C, for instance, says square. Well, he's dead, but rest in peace.
Yeah. And there's a thing in Pulp Fiction about don't be a square. Don't be L7, man. Don't be, which is, you know, Pulp Fiction is a hip movie.
It's also old. And I never really understood that.
It's old people 15 years ago and they're pretending to
even older people. Yeah. Well, and what's the whole L7 thing? I never got that.
L7 is you hold your hands up like an L and a 7 and it forms a square.
Ah, okay.
It's an even older, more unhip square way of saying square.
Yeah.
L7. There was a chick punk rock band called L7 that was on Warner Brothers at the same time Bomb was.
Yeah, I remember that. I just never understood where it came from.
Yeah. But a funny thing is in that movie Demolition Man that my face is in that we talk about all the time, and Jesse Ventura is in, who I think should run for president or vice president with Ron Paul.
Yeah.
And he might.
Yeah.
He gets it, which is kind of surprising too. It's like, you know, the singer in Bomb and the Dwarves and, you know, Jesse the Body Ventura are political. I mean, really?
Right.
Okay.
And Wesley Snipes tries to use magic words to get out of paying taxes.
Yeah. But L7 is also in the movie Demolition Man. It's the name of the computer that the police use, like that they talk to, like, computer, help us solve this crime. It's like L7. You know, the state bot 2000 is called the L7. The state bot is square.
Well, that whole movie's a repudiation of government force in a way. I mean, I can't help but think
Well, it really is, because it's, I mean, one of the first scenes in it is a violent criminal escaped from cryo prison about to wreak havoc on everybody, and a cop goes up to him, and the cops don't have guns anymore, and his little, like, iPhone tells the cop what to do. He says, tell the maniac in a firm voice to lie down.
Right.
You know, and that was another thing Blagg said. Like, he said, I think my idea of democracy is no one has guns, not even the police or the military. And I'm like, really?
That's the real fantasy land.
There would cease to be a state, man. What are they going to do? Like, put you in jail by suggestion? You know, it's going to be maniac, lie down.
Yeah.
And then the maniac's going to kick the out of everybody with his karate skills, and they're not going to expect it, and they're going to be killed.
Right. Also, I think it's important in Demolition Man, it's all about the repression of the futuristic society. You say a cuss word, which Sylvester Stallone does all the time. He gets a little ticket that comes right out of the wall.
And salt's illegal, MSG's illegal, sex is illegal.
And also, back to the Monopoly point, there's only one restaurant, and it's Taco Bell.
Yeah.
As per government Monopoly.
Yes. Which we always talked about, like, well, what do they serve if salt, meat, and fat and MSG are illegal? And no, they serve little, like, creatively garnished puddles of Soylent Green on your, you know, little dollops of Soylent Green on your plate.
Right.
Looks like Soylent Green. It's green. It's green paste with, like, parsley on it.
Yeah. It also foreshadows sort of the food freedom movement, as there's, who's the leader of the rebellion? He's sort of an actor. He sings the
Dennis
Leary's in it, and he has a great monologue about how he just wants to sit in a greasy spoon and eat fat even if he gets a heart attack, and that's his
right. Smoking a cigar, drinking a beer, looking at porn. Yeah, and like, he has taken his rebels down in the sewer, and they're living in the sewer and eating rat burgers rather than participate in this neutered virgin society.
Yeah.
You know, someone says in the movie that, like, Stallone says, like, you like this world? Your idea of a good time is being a 40-year-old virgin singing, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener.
Is that what he says to Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, well, that's all that's on the radio in that society is
right.
What they call mini tunes, which are just ads from the 20th century. Speaking of ads, now that we are the Vapor Smith Freedom Hour, I'm going to put in our new ad for Vaporsmiths here.
All right. Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes.
Vaporsmith.com.
excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths are clean, efficient, and tasty. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Yeah. So I guess we could still say square to finish up that conversation because we're not old. We're old school.
This is weird. I think I'm on that cusp where I'm transitioning from youth to old people-ness.
How old are you? 28?
27. And people always say that. They say, oh, you're 28. Even my wife thinks I'm 28. No, I'm 27.
Well, all the cool people died when they were 27. So if you make it to 28,
then you're lame.
You're old.
Then you're square.
Yeah, because what? Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Kurt Cobain, some other old people.
The hope and dream I hold on to is Jay-Z wasn't famous until he was 26, so maybe I'm just a year behind.
Do you want to be famous? I don't really care about being famous. I care more about my art being famous, but I get to go along for the ride.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel too.
My art is kind of famous. Oh, one of the things I'm going to, one of the videos I'm going to link is my movie, Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow, which is narrated by Robert Downey Jr., is now all up as one file on YouTube. MVD finally put it up.
Nice.
So I'll link that.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good movie.
I'm starting to get more like people from my old days writing me, which is good because I have like 100,000 fans for my pre-Liberty stuff, and a few of them are finding this stuff. I just got this one from this guy, Jeff, today. He said, wanted to say hello. I've been listening to you reading your stuff for many years. I may have dropped off a bit since you became a libertarian, but I have to admit, I've listened to every episode of Freedom Fiends. You are so entertaining and informative. Even if I do not agree on every point, I've definitely learned a lot from your new podcast.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, just want to let you know, I just ordered some Vaporsmith, and I'm having it shipped to me in Tokyo, Japan.
Oh yeah.
Good for him.
Definitely. Good for him.
Yep. And then we got another one. Actually, we got a really funny one. It was from someone in Russia. They didn't speak English that well, and they said, I really like the Freedom Fence. Instead of Freedom Fiends, and I was like, wow, that sounds like something Rick Perry'd want to put up. So we're going to put up a Freedom Fence, and it's going to have electrified alligators in it.
That shoot laser beams.
Yeah, that shoot laser beams. That's a Daily Show thing, isn't it?
I don't know. Probably Austin Powers. That's Dr. Evil.
Did you look up samizdat?
Yeah, I did. Samizdat? So that was the word used in Soviet Russia for people passing along freedom-oriented or, you know, non-Soviet-oriented government disapproved media. I guess it was
stuff that couldn't pass the Statebot 2000 because right. It was L7.
I guess it was books L7. Back then and pamphlets, you know, it wasn't podcasts.
It was like fanzines. It was like freedom fanzines. And, you know, I'm going to link that site too because I think there's a lot of useful information on there of how to pass things around in the freer way we have now, but even if things get restricted.
Right, right. And this was sort of in 1984 where the supposed resistance or underground has a book that they all pass along and they have to secretly find it. Of course, Winston gets fooled by one of the government goons who tries to pass along the book and say he's part of the resistance, and he ends up in room 101, so... Be wary. Always be wary.
So we got another fan mail. Speaking of the old country, we got a fan letter from a Croatian girl who lives in Italy. She's from Croatia and lives in Italy. Croatia used to be Yugoslavia.
Right.
And I have a Yugoslavian AK-47, which she told me would not be legal in Croatia.
Unless it were
now.
A decommissioned replica, like in a museum.
Neutered. Yeah. Like, you know, they'd have to fill the barrel with cement. Ugh. And... take a oxyacetylene torch to the firing mechanism.
Disgusting.
Yep. But she said, hi there. You know, I wanted to write you a while back about a nice coincidence. A year ago, my fiance saw the title of You're in Your Wife's Book, Diary of an S&M Romance, and thought it might be interesting. Actually, I found it so great I wanted to meet the authors, so I checked you on Facebook. There I discovered Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends, and all the great activist stuff you do, so I passed it on to my fiance.
Yeah.
He's a sociologist and an anarcho-libertarian for many years, after being an anarcho-lefty activist when younger, and pretty disappointed with it, I can say. The problem is, in countries such as Italy and Croatia, libertarian is commonly understood as a synonym for anarchist, and anarchists are often associated with lefties, so it is really hard to explain to people what libertarian really means, especially if you know that the term right is demonized here. However, I want to thank you for all your work. The way you're treating the issues really clearly and directly, and it gave me some great arguments for discussing this with people.
Awesome. What was her name?
Nice.
We don't have to out it if you don't want.
No, she said it was okay to use her first name. Iva.
Iva. Ah, that's a pretty name. Thank you, Iva.
Yeah. And she listens to us on her the streaming feed. We have a streaming feed now. She listens on our on her chromed robot turret or cell phone or whatever.
Okay. So she's listening to, you know, that sort of plays a lot of the old casts.
Yeah, well, it rotates them all randomly, which is why she hasn't gotten to the part yet, the last few casts where we've been discussing, what the hell do we call ourselves? We don't know, you know, and we're still not solidified on anything. Although right. For now, I like anti-war pro-gun, which she said could fly there, but they have pretty restrictive gun laws. One of the many conditions to get a gun license is to have a valid reason to want to carry a gun. And the meaning of that is not clear. It depends on how the police feel at the moment. We have a really Kafkaian bureaucracy
right,
here,
right.
Which I loved.
Yeah, a valid reason. I mean, it should be valid enough that you want to own a gun. That's valid enough for me.
Yeah, it's like, well, California's that way. In a lot of places, you know, to get a permit, you have to have a valid reason. Whereas here, it used to be the only valid reason you had to have was, I want a permit, and now you don't even need a permit in Wyoming.
Yes. A step forward for Wyoming.
A step forward from the otherwise often statist rulers of this state. They'll let you carry a gun without a permit, but they'll send someone to kick in your door for a joint, and they will hold you down. There was recently 5 cops held down a guy to take a blood draw when he wanted to refuse, when he was intoxicated and not driving erratically.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good microcosm of the essence of the state, holding you down to steal your blood from you.
Yeah, literally.
So that is disgusting. Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about bitcoins here. I mentioned this after the last cast to you, and you wanted to talk a little bit about the technology behind it and the mining of bitcoins, which I didn't know that that's how it worked. I thought somebody had created them, but apparently a bitcoin is sort of a physical thing in that it's a long series of data that can't be reproduced, right?
Right. It uses encryption technology, and the amount of computing power it takes to mine them, which is to create them, is phenomenal, to the point where people buy computers that are set up just to do it.
Right.
Because there is money in making them and selling them at a slight profit. Interesting thing about it is, like, the part of a computer that's generally best suited for crunching these giant numbers, it involves so much repetition and random number generating that video cards are better for it than the central processing unit of the computer.
Right, so, the GPU rather than the CPU.
Yeah, so they've actually, some people have built computers that have, like, you know, 8 video cards running in parallel to do this. And what some other people, unscrupulous people, have done is created viruses that spread to other computers, and they don't steal any information. They steal resources. They live in the graphics card of someone else's computer and create bitcoins and then send them back to the owner of the virus.
Right, which is obviously not something we'd co-sign at all. But the reason I'd been so interested in bitcoins is not necessarily as an alternative to...
What are bitcoins? For anyone that's just hearing this word for the first time.
Well, so bitcoins are a means that people say are more anonymous than, say, PayPal or other methods of online payment.
It's a representative currency. You know, it's a created fiction, like American Federal Reserve notes, that's created privately, not through corporations, not through governments. And people are using them. Basically, what people do is they buy and sell them with Federal Reserve notes or the whatever their country's currency is.
Or they tried to mine them with their 8 graphics cards on their computer.
Well, when you mine them, I believe they still have to be backed by actual money.
Okay. Hmm.
I think that's how it works. I think it's like you mine them and then, you know, let's say they're worth $1 or you're deciding that this one is worth $1. You know, you sell it to someone else for $1.05. You've got the 5 cents for having mined it.
Okay. In any case, the reason I was intrigued by it was a story that happened or came out, you know, around summertime of this thing called Silk Road that was a place where people could theoretically, you know, they'd have to access it through a Tor browser, which is anonymous, and they could buy and sell things that are illegal. It's basically like an online black market kind of thing to buy drugs, you know, order your LSD online and have it shipped to you kind of thing. Very convenient, very much in the LibPair kind of mold. And I was wondering, you know, because one of the things that really annoys me is going and looking at guns online and just how obtuse and upsetting it is that I'm going to have to take that extra step of going and getting an FFL to approve it and getting them to fax each other back and forth and pay an extra fee. And, you know, that's really ridiculous. I should be able to buy a gun online and have it shipped to me and be like, oh, awesome, a gun.
Of course, we'd never do this because we don't break the law. But in theory, we like the theory that someone could do
this. We definitely like the theory. I mean, because it's obviously ridiculous to make things, objects, illegal as opposed to
actions. The government doesn't like the theory, and they've been kind of, I don't know if they've been going after it, but they've been looking into what they can do to stop it or regulate
it. They have. And when pressed, one of the Bitcoin developers, Jeff Garzik, sort of said something very statist and sort of made me lose faith. I don't know necessarily in him or the organization, but is almost upsetting to me. He said, attempting major illicit transactions with Bitcoin, given existing statistical analysis techniques deployed by the field and law enforcement, is pretty damn dumb. And then said that we are working with the government to make sure that the long arm of the government can reach Bitcoin. And the only way Bitcoins are going to be successful is working with regulation and with the government, which is a very statist thing to say.
I'm wondering if they got to him, you know? I'm wondering if they're like, look, you need to rein this in or you're going to go to prison for counterfeiting or something like that, or an accessory to selling drugs.
They may have, but I mean, this also, the people who do Silk Road also came out with a statement that I thought was really encouraging and made me feel like they were fighting the good fight in response to the Fed goons, because, you know, I think it was Charles Schumer and a number of senators and Fed goons basically said, we got to shut this thing down. This is completely brazen. You shouldn't be able to sell drugs voluntarily. And the Silk Road people said, the die has been cast and now we will see how they land. We'll be diverting even more effort into countering their attacks and making the site as resilient as possible. I'm sure this news will scare off some, but we should win the fight. A new era will be born. Even if we lose, the genie is out of the bottle and they are fighting a losing war already. Which I found really heartening, and I feel like the Second American Revolution, or the People Spring, if you want to call it that, I think it will and is being fought and will be won on the interwebs.
Now, did you find this on, where did you find this? Wikipedia?
Yeah, I did some wiki and looking at older articles on it, because the media had sort of fallen silent on Silk Road. So I was wondering, you know, either the government got to them and we would have heard the story by now, or they're still plugging along and that's why we haven't heard the story.
I'm checking it out right now. One of the citations on the Wikipedia article of the quote you just said links to a YouTube video which has been removed by the user.
I see. Okay. So again, these guys are in the utmost secrecy, but if somebody claiming to be from them said that, then I think that's heartening, and I can understand that why they'd want to keep that kind of anonymous, obviously.
And, you know, not to say that he didn't say that, but I just searched that quote on Google, and the only thing that's coming up is like Wikipedia, some blog, some site that relists blogs, some other blog. You know, I can't find a major news source with this, or not that that doesn't mean he didn't say it, but, and this is kind of the thing, like, we will hammer all day long about Fox News and CNN, but with some things, I tend to believe it more if CNN has said it, you know?
Yeah.
What about you? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there are things that CNN and Fox aren't going to cover, and I think that the news director in CNN would say something like, I don't care what these people think, these drug peddlers think. And also, if the guy's trying to remain anonymous, they're not going to be able to confirm it anyway in a journalistic standard, which obviously we aren't able to do that now. So take it for what it is, take it for a grain of salt. But I think it does encompass a sentiment that I at least hope the people in charge of Silk Road believe in. And I mean, I think it is almost, you would expect that of somebody who would spend so much effort and take so much risk in something like Silk Road.
Yeah, I guess I'll backpedal a little bit on the, if I don't see it on CNN and it's only on blogs, it didn't happen, because the Operation Fast and Furious, you know, a year ago or 9 months ago, was only on like David Kudrya's blog and Sipsy Street Irregulars, and then the mainstream media picked it up. and it's everywhere now.
Well, not only that, but a story where the feds say they're going to shut down a website and then the website still exists 5 months later. That's not a story that they're necessarily going to want to pick up.
Yeah.
So
true
that,
because they are the mouthpiece of the state, the mainstream media is, which, you know, everybody says, but you worked as the mouthpiece for the mainstream media, so you can really say it for sure. And it's funny because, like, the mainstream media says that too, like, you know, O'Reilly says that, and then he tells a bunch of lies.
Yeah
In the next sentence.
It's very true. And I think the bigger point I want to make here is the fact that there are technologies, you know, maybe Bitcoin's not it yet. Maybe Silk Road isn't it yet. But, you know, Napster isn't what MP3s evolved into. You know, they were the ones to sort of breach the hole, you know.
But then they went statist really quickly, too. I mean, Napster now is a legal pay download music site.
But yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying is these are sort of the pioneers. It doesn't mean that they're going to be the ones, or this model is going to be the one for LibPair or for free transactions and bringing the black market into the convenience of the internet. But they've laid those tracks, or, you know, started to breach that path. I think something else will come along. I mean, now, if you want something for free, you don't do Napster or anything like that. It evolved into BitTorrent and going to Pirate Bay and things like that. So there's a way that's much easier than Napster ever was, and that you can get a million different more things. So I think that that is where we're headed, not necessarily with Bitcoin, not necessarily with Silk Road, but I think that that is the wave of the future.
Yeah. Worms. The Patriot Act, a series of laws to make it easier to spy on patriots. I came up with that this week.
Yeah.
I also came up with politicians understand liberty like my cat understands my computer.
Not at all.
Well, I said it just, you know, like, yeah, they don't understand. But then I thought about it, and, like, it even has better meanings of, like, you know, cats like to lay on computers and keep them warm, but they don't know how to use them. And politicians like to quote liberty to keep them warm and fuzzy, but they don't know anything about how it works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, liberty or freedom, those are really just buzzwords to politicians.
Schumer is one of the worst, too. Schumer is, and that's why a lot of survivalists who don't want to say the word shit will say, when the Schumer hits the fan, which we quoted in a song. What's the line there?
When the Schumer hits the fan, I'll be surviving with my band, with more AK ammo than all Afghanistan.
Yes. MC Chorboy spits. MC Brillo Pad. Well, you know where the word Napster got its name from, right? Was the kid who started Napster had nappy hair, and when he was a kid, that was his nickname, was Napster.
Okay.
So, you know, he actually had something to do with not starting Facebook, but with like, he was an advisor to Mark Zuckerberg for a while.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that.
So did you hear about, there was somebody who was making a competing social network that was died mysteriously this
right,
week?
22-year-old kid, I forget his name. Do you remember the name of the social networking site?
I don't know. And people are, like, wondering, like, was he murdered by some rival company or something? I'm thinking about, did you ever see that movie Antitrust?
No.
Oh, it's great. It's got, God, who's the actor? I really like him. Tim Robbins. It's a really good popcorn movie. It's basically about some giant computer conglomerate that kind of looks like Microsoft, but it's not Microsoft, because Microsoft is mentioned as the competition in this, to this company. But Tim Robbins plays a guy who kind of looks and acts like Bill Gates, mm-hmm. but his company is murdering other programmers.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a good movie, and I like it, except it gets really socialist at the end of it. It's like these plucky kids working out of their garage, like, steal all the secrets of this evil company and give them away on the internet because information should be free. Which, you know, kind of gets into, like, I have problems.
Intellectual property.
IP. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I also have a problem with the, you know, it's free to steal everything owned by this giant corporation that's the result of millions of, you know, thousands of people working and being paid to do it and murdering people. But, you know, I guess that makes it okay. But it does, but it doesn't. But it just has a real, like, screw the man from a lefty standpoint kind of stance. But other than that, it's a good movie.
Okay. Yeah, I might check that out one day.
Yeah
probably not.
Yeah.
I don't watch a whole lot of movies. I guess I should.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.
Rolling.
The Cartomizers are rolling, I guess.
Yeah, the Cartomizers from Vaporsmith were rolling on the floor, and I had to catch them. So, DJ Chore Boy.
MC, you got to get it right, homie. Get it twisted. Yeah,
I'm the cut creator. You're the spitter. Talk about the war on trees. We talked about this a little last time, but...
See, I don't know if it's okay to call it a war on trees. They are batting around the idea of putting a 15-cent tax on Christmas trees. You know, when the government goes to war with something, they do a lot worse than that. But it is the, I guess, an attack on trees. It's an attack on people selling trees, people buying trees, because it's forced. It's a tax. It's not something that you donate to. So obviously, I think that that can do nothing but harm. I know in the notes on this, you were mentioning what Bill O'Reilly's take could be as far as, you know, because he talks about what the war on Christmas and gets all upset that it's supposed to be called holidays now instead of Christmas.
Oh, so you're calling my thoughts as being like Bill O'Reilly. I didn't even consider that.
No, I'm not considering your thoughts like Bill O'Reilly. I don't think I would ever try to do such a thing to you.
My thought was there's no stink about this. Like, I haven't really heard much mention of it, but like if they were trying to put a 15% tax on something that's, you know, a secular icon of another religion. Or a religious icon. Like, you know, if the government said, they aren't selling enough Hanukkah candles, we're going to put a 15% tax on them. People would be up in arms. Or, I don't know enough about Islam to know what the paraphernalia of celebrating it is.
Well, if they put a tax on prayer rugs or something like that.
Or halal food, which is, you know, Muslim, halal, which is Muslim kosher, sort of. Which is actually very similar, and they're both pretty brutal. You know, I probably get death threats from both sides for this, but, you know, in halal and kosher slaughtering, you basically have to slit the throat of the animal. You can't shoot him in the head. You can't kill him really quickly.
Yeah, but so your argument is that you think if this was done to a different religion or a different holiday other than Christmas, there'd be a bigger stink about it from, I guess, lefties?
Yes. Yeah, I guess from lefties. I don't like to agree with Bill O'Reilly on anything, and he's really
statist.
You know, separation of church and state only when it suits him.
He's everything only when it suits him.
Yeah, you know, I think that I don't know. It's really hard for me to defend the war on Christmas, but
well, I don't think we're defending the war on Christmas. I think we just dealt with it last cast that if you really want to increase Christmas tree sales, and it's so important to you that there must be some kind of study to find out why people aren't buying Christmas trees, then you ask for donations or you set up some kind of fund that's voluntary. Of all the things, Christmas, the spirit of giving and peace and goodwill to mankind, you're going to use something like taxes to promote it.
Okay, I'm going to change the subject here because I just feel like I've painted myself into a corner. The Casper Commie Star Tribune, Red Star Tribune, just came. I grabbed it during the break. I don't even know what this headline is, but I just love it. It's hilariously statist. This is the banner headline on my local paper. It says, Board apologizes over hurt feelings report.
The hurt feelings report. Wow, that's how far the state has gotten out of control. They have a report for hurt feelings. We used to have that at, it was sort of a joke at my last news station in Wyoming. We had a form you could fill out to say why you were hurt. And it was all like, did you get butt hurt about something? Please explain why you're a little bitch. And then it had like lines for you to fill in the blanks.
And this was not an official part of your company, I'm sure.
It was not an official part of the company. Right.
Because, you know, if the company did that officially, they'd probably be open to a lawsuit for sexual inappropriateness. Right.
This was something circulated among the employees as a joke.
Here's another one. Wyoming officials look forward to review of Obamacare.
You were telling me that the Supreme Court is going to hear one state's case against pretty much the individual mandate. Is that correct?
It's 26 states, but
okay.
But yeah, it's going to go to the Supreme Court, and they're going to decide two things. One is if the individual mandate is constitutional, and the other thing is if it's not constitutional, is there severability? In other words, can the rest of the thing go on without the individual mandate? Which technically, economically, it really can't, you know, because they've done all their number crunching based on everyone having to buy insurance.
Right, exactly. And that was supposed to be one of the selling points of how they were going to save money, was that everybody was going to have to pay for insurance.
You know, most people I know who are adamantly in favor of Obamacare and think it's immoral to not have it are people, I hate to say it, they're people who can't afford health insurance, so they think the government should put guns to everyone's head and make other people buy them their health insurance.
Yeah, or there are people who, you know, can't afford health insurance, but for some reason think it's moral to point guns at people and force them to pay for the less fortunate's health insurance. And, you know, there was some hubbub, you know, I guess during one of the Republican debates, somebody mentioned, should that person die if they don't have insurance? And supposedly people cheered. Well, they did cheer, which isn't something, you know, that we want to own or say, yes, people should die. But
the example they used at the debates, I thought was couched well, and I liked Ron Paul's answer, and he's doing well in the polls, by the way.
He is, and that's a freedom fix, I think. We've done some freedom fixes before for Ron Paul. Freedom fix. Freedom fix. Freedom fix. But I think now is notable as well. He's second place in the New Hampshire poll, and I think he was first place in one of the main Iowa polls.
But it's being ignored by the mainstream media. And they're lying. Like Bill O'Reilly, Ron Paul came in first in Bill O'Reilly's unofficial poll. You know,
he threw it out because it was quote unquote gamed. And MSNBC also had one that they said they threw out. And then instead of having the poll on the URL, it was an explanation from the editor saying, we figured out that this was gamed, so we threw the poll out. So yeah. When is having a bunch of people that support you go to vote for you gaming the system?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how the system's supposed to work, right? I mean, not that I agree with the system, but that's the rules. If enough people vote for you, you win.
So what were we talking about before that?
We're talking about the individual mandate.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, and people say this all the time. I've had a cop say this to me when I asked about why the government should tell you to put your seatbelt on. I asked him that question. And he was like, well, because if you get in a wreck, it's not just you. It's everybody else has to pay for you because you go to the hospital.
And the thing is that statists who have those arguments don't understand is that laws don't really prevent much.
No, no.
They really don't.
They're just words on a piece of paper. Yeah. That's all
people,
they are.
You know, ask anybody on death row if the fact that murder can put you on death row entered their mind when they were committing the murder that put them on death row.
And they'll say, no, I'm a murderer.
Or, you know, no.
Or I didn't do it.
Pissed me off. Or I didn't do it in a lot of cases, and they're sometimes right.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the point is, laws are nothing but ink on paper.
Here's a good headline. Oakland raid is the latest in Occupy crackdown. California police, decked in riot gear, armed with tear gas, cleared out Oakland's anti-Wall Street encampment Monday. And, you know, I think most people reading the Casper Star Tribune, whether they're liberals or Republicans, probably go, good, those people are getting in the way. They should be arrested. And my thought is, like, you know, really, to all the people in the movement, the Occupy movement, who are complaining about the corporations and saying the government needs to do something. First of all, you want to know what the government in its purest form is? It's those f***ing cops in riot gear cracking your skulls and arresting you and tear gassing you.
Exact. Yes.
Secondly, without the government, corporations as big business, as a problem, as they exist, and everything you're complaining about could not exist without the government intervention. Corporations and corporate personhood, which is one of the biggest complaints of the people in this movement, that doesn't exist without a government. And then people say, a common one I hear, and this is another one Blagg brought up, was, well, without government help and regulation, it'd be like it was back when they had the Pinkerton guards machine gunning those striking coal workers. And I'm like, no, in libertarian paradise, those striking workers would have guns and would be shooting back. In my lib pair, the workers would be armed.
Yeah.
In their pair, they probably think, you know, a lot of socialists, like people who have Che Guevara on their chest, you're like, what's their plan? And they're like, well, there should be a revolution and we should take over. And you're like, well, so you're pro-gun, citizen for citizens? And they're like, they have this vague concept of, like, guns should be issued for the revolution and then recalled after the revolution.
Which brings up another good point, and this was a point that was really well stated in the video you post on the last cast we did. That was sort of an open letter to all the Occupy Wall Streeters, was you really got to know, if you're going to have a revolution or you're going to have a big popular uprising, you really got to know what the problem is. Otherwise, it's going to get co-opted. And a lot of the Occupy Wall Streeters, yeah, they are under the impression that we just need the government to do the right things.
The corporations are just the shadow. The Occupy people, those people. No, I mean, I'm in solidarity with what they're doing. I like it. But they're yelling at the wrong thing. They're yelling at the shadow of the giant. The real giant is the Federal Reserve and the government.
Exactly. Exactly.
They should be occupying the Federal Reserve. They should be occupying the government.
And not only that, but if the majority of them get their way, not much is going to change. It's going to be just like we saw in Egypt where, you know, yeah, they threw out the, you know, they threw out Mubarak and nothing happened. The military still controls everything and it's pretty much the same as it ever was.
And they're also doing, this week, they're doing things like trying to shut down Wall Street, like blocking traffic, you know, blocking the bridge, blocking the commuters coming into that part of the area. And it's like, you're just screwing the 99%. You're just screwing the people who are trying to get to their job. The 1% don't use the bridge. The 1% either...
They land in helicopters on top of the
building.
They take
a private helicopter from Connecticut if they even have to go into work at all. Mm-hmm. You know, the 1% that control Wall Street probably either telecommute or they don't have to work. Their money's just working for them. You know, they call their broker on Wall Street and let him take care of it.
Right.
The 1%... The brokers aren't even, they're still the 99%.
Really. Not only that, but the 99%, you know, if they're statist or leftist, they say, you know, we the people, we're the government. You know, we decide, we call the shots. But no, the 1% is really
is the government.
They're the government, and they're what the problem is. So really, know who you're attacking and know what the alternative is and know what the main problem is. The main problem, okay, yes, they got all the bailouts, they got all this money, but where did that all come from? That came from force, from governments extracting money from the 99% at gunpoint and having a monopoly with the Federal Reserve on money creation at gunpoint and having a monopoly in the form of deciding what gets spent as money through the Federal Reserve.
I think when people hear people saying statist shit, they should call them out. Like if you hear it at the next table at a restaurant, get up in someone's grill. You know, I read something the other day that was like, I was just like, really? You think there needs to be a law for this? I was reading, and this wasn't someone I could get up at their grill. It was in a magazine, but I was reading Popular Mechanics. I was at my wife's office waiting for her to sign something for some client, you know, on a Saturday. And I was reading Popular Mechanics because it's one of those like, you know, dentist office or, you know, she works in a law firm. Law firms have magazines like that.
It's
that
better, than Time. Time makes me sick, or Newsweek makes me sick when I read
it. Yeah. And Popular Mechanics, I mean, they're not a nanny magazine. They have ads for the Ruger LCP, you know, which is the light carry pistol. There was an article in there written by a guy who installs fiber optics in offices and homes for a living. And it was an article where he was talking about how to deal with the filth of crawl spaces. Like, you know, there's spiders, there's dust, there's dirt. And he was like saying, well, I put on this kind of PVC suit and then I use this kind of duct tape and this kind of around my wrists for the gloves and then this kind of gas mask and then this kind of lighting so I can see this past the spiders to do this work. He was like, it makes me so mad that they have these crawl spaces, you know, in all buildings, and they're so dirty. And I just hope that future building codes will outlaw crawl spaces. And I'm like, really? You don't like getting dirty, so you want government guns to protect you? And then it's also like crawl spaces are part of what enable you to be able to wire houses with whatever you want, because without crawl spaces, that's going to be concrete. You're going to have to split open to put in wires.
Not only that, but it sounds like he's already got the problem fixed. He's got his special gloves, his special suit. What's he complaining about? He wants his, he wants government guns to make his job easier?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, well, I want the government to use their guns to give me money so I don't have to work. That's how you take that same logic to the next
step. I want
step.
The government to eliminate my job, is almost what he's saying.
That's,
you know,
pretty much what
he's
saying.
Not a lot of people are willing. It doesn't take a lot of knowledge to do that. I actually helped a friend as an assistant, you know, paid day jobs, who used to wire houses for cable TV. And it's like, it doesn't take rocket science. They can teach you to do it in a weekend. And, you know, I was doing it as assistant with no training. A lot of it is just being willing to go down where there's spiders and dirt. So if that crawl space thing were eliminated, his job would be anybody be able to do it, or no one would be able to do it, and his job would disappear.
Yeah. Not only that, but if he's really that adamant about it, take care of it on your individual level. Nobody's forcing you to go in the crawl spaces. Tell the company, hey, I don't do crawl spaces. And somebody else will gladly do it.
If your job is laying cable in residences and offices and you don't do crawl spaces, you don't have that job, because that's what a lot of
tough luck then. If he hates the crawl spaces so much, he should go find another job.
You know, my friend said, like, that job is 90% dealing with crawl spaces and the other 10% is f***ing bored housewives. That's what he said.
Okay, so that's why the guy wants to keep the job.
No, not the guy in the paper, my friend that used to do that.
That's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. Fair enough. But yeah, really ridiculous. And people should call people out on this. Definitely. Anything like that. Anytime somebody starts with, there should be a law or we should make it illegal, that's when you know, that's when the square siren should start going off in your head and you can go horizontally liberate that situation.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
So, speaking of square, like square to the point of like being cubical because it's three-dimensional square, it's so square. Ben Bernanke is doing a town hall meeting tour to tell people how great the Federal Reserve is and how it helps create jobs.
Wow. A, good luck. B, I think this is almost a freedom fix just because
we're making a difference.
Yeah, he's sort of on the run. If he feels like he should take time out of his busy schedule printing money to go talk to people, then somebody's making a dent. Greenspan would have never done this.
I know.
So that's awesome. But also in the article here that talks about this, one of the interesting things I saw was his town hall meeting was at Fort Bliss. It was directed at the military. And I was thinking, that's really the audience you're going for here? Is the military? Is that to make sure they're on your side when the shit hits the fan?
Yeah, so when they go door to door to confiscate when they go door to door with guns to confiscate gold and to confiscate Freedom Fiends episodes on iPods, they'll believe in it.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, I really hope they don't buy it, but, you know, I guess we'll see. The other thing here is the idea that the Federal Reserve can create jobs. Now, they can certainly print money and pay people for it, but that doesn't come from anything productive. It's not real money. It might be creating something for somebody to do, and then they get paid for it, but it's not going to make the economy any better. It's not going to add any real productivity to the world.
Freedom Fiends. Anti-war, pro-gun. New show on the Micro Effect Radio Network, Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi's fun and feisty weekly chat about constitutional, libertarian, minarchist, and anarchist issues, abuse of authority by police, the war on drugs, the war on guns, self-defense, states' rights, natural rights, Austrian economics, DIY art, low-budget filmmaking, digital recording, activism, rock and roll, and more. Freedom Fiends. Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Learn more about The Micro Effect at themicroeffect.com.
So I think we're getting near the end here. There's a couple videos that I'm going to link that are pretty funny. One is the whitest kids you know on politicians. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I'm gonna put that one up.
Is that the one where he says, I'm a narcissistic sociopath?
Yes.
Most people would feel uncomfortable making decisions for millions of people, but not me.
Yep. And another is an Onion News. It's an article, actually, about Kansas outlaws the practice of evolution. And it's fake news, but it's really funny and it's believable. So
yeah.
I'm going to end with three quotes that are things I said that I think relate to intellectual property. Everything that can be done has been done. Being an artist now simply consists of being a great editor. That's quote number one. Quote number two is, an idea cannot be stolen because a properly executed idea contains you as an integral part of the equation. Yep. And the final one, which we'll end with, is he who dies with his art on the most hard drives wins.
Yes. Dropping some science on him, DJ Silencer.
DJ Silencer and MC Chorboy.
Yeah.
All right, worms.
Peace.
Peace.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom Fiends, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.